It is a very special, lifelong Al-Anon sister of the spirit, my friend Marie McGee. Marie has been an instrumental and healing part of my own personal journey in Al-Anon, and I'm so grateful for her willingness to share with us on Let Go and Let God. Marie, as agreed, I'll give you a 5-minute reminder, and after you speak, we'll invite people, the membership, to share on their experience, strength and hope on Let Go and Let God. Marie, I love you, and I'll hand it over to you.
Thank you so much, Louisa. That's great help to me. I just want to say I'm a very grateful member of this worldwide fellowship, and just to see all the faces and these people from all over the world is just something else. Thank you, Louisa, for asking me to serve and to share, because it has added to my growth and my preparation and reflection for talking about my experience, strength and hope. Before I start, we've had some Irish. I'm not a native Irish speaker, but I'd like to say a little quote from Padraig O'Toole. He is a famous Irish poet, author and theologian. And this is from his book. Erskrith, Akela, Awaris, Nadini. And what that means in English is, it is in the shelter of each other that the people live. And to me, that sums up Al-Anon a lot. So I'm going to, I'm going to talk a brief summary of my story, and then the gifts of recovery, including Let Go and Let God, aspects of my life where that has happened, and then closing. So just to start off, I want to read from page 203, Encouraged to Change, because it sets the tone for my story, I feel, very well. So it's page 203, July the 21st. The people I love won't take care of themselves, so I have to do it. How will they survive unless I... This was my thinking when I came to Al-Anon. My excuse for interfering in everyone's business. My needs seemed so unimportant compared to the constant crises all around me. Al-Anon told me that I had other options, one of which was to let go and let God. When I think of letting go, I remind myself that there is a natural order to life, a chain of events that a higher power has in mind. When I let go of a situation, I allow life to unfold according to that plan. I open my mind and let other ways of thinking and behaving enter in. When I let go of another person, I am affirming their right to live their own life, to make their own choices, and so grow as they experience the result of their actions. A higher power exists for others as well. My obsessive interference disrupts not only my connection with them, but also my connection with my own spiritual self. So today's reminder, I am my top priority. By keeping the focus on myself, I let go of other people's problems and can cope better with my own. What can I do for myself today? So I've started Let Go, Let God by preparation for today, letting go of my ego, my desire to do this perfectly, my nervousness, and then let God take over from there and just let it flow and the words to come. So I'm the eldest of four. Both my parents are alcoholic. They have died. The backdrop to my story is growing up in the Troubles in Northern Ireland and Belfast, of which we were in the middle of societal trauma, including sectarianism and institutional oppression. My father was interned without charge and tortured. In the midst of that, he was drinking alcoholically. Then my mother joined him. Domestic violence, poverty, suicide attempts, mental illness, all the things lots of people here will know plenty about. So I grew up, and the things that really I learned when I came into Al-Anon, all the how to survive, I just became a little miss caretaker, fixer, and controller, and a bit perfectionist. I was a crux between mummy and daddy. I felt responsible for my mother's health and well-being and her protection. I had an unbelievable level of, I didn't know this until like my first year or two in Al-Anon, but I had this intense level of fear. It was all-consuming, and this need to control, obsess, and project. I didn't realize all this because I put on a good front. You know, my survival mechanisms were very strong. So by the time I got to Al-Anon, my first meeting, I hated my father with a passion. I was actually physically choking in my throat at my first meeting. I hated him so much. At this stage, I was 37. I had a successful career, what might look like a great life on the outside, and three kids. But it was 1997, and I had no clue. I thought there's something seriously wrong with me. I just got promotion in work. I was such a people pleaser. My whole insides depended on other people's outsides. I couldn't cognitively understand all this. But when I got into that first meeting, oh my God, it probably was like the start of a spiritual awakening for me. There was bigger to come. But that night, I just felt no longer alone. I felt safe. I heard my story. And I've heard lots of members say they went to their first meeting and thought everybody was crackpots and didn't go back for a couple of years. Well, I didn't have that. I got this connection right away. And a big part of it was feeling safe. So the two things I took away from that night was detach with love, and the three C's. You didn't cause it, you can't control it, and you can't cure it. That was like a weight off my back, because I'd really given 110% to try and fix my parents. So after that, I stopped ringing so much and getting my nose in between the two of them so much. So that was all really, really good. I started to try and get a life for myself. They call denial the great shock absorber of the soul, and I really think that is so true. You know, I have gone down many avenues of, like our books say, help outside the program, and done lots and lots and lots of things in my life, but all roads lead back to here, the 12 steps. I so love the wisdom, the all faiths and none. Those books, Courage to Change and Hope for Today, are just, I mean, I'm reading them 20 odd years and still blow me out of the water. And in preparation for this convention, it's just reminded me, it's been difficult at times. It's brought up a whole lot of stuff and a whole lot of memories, but it's brought up a lot of the good stuff as well. So 2 years into my recovery, it was a year where my father nearly died. My brother was beaten up. He was assaulted in North Belfast and left for dead. So he was left with a brain injury. So out of my three siblings, my brother died at 46 of alcohol and drugs. And my other brother was beaten up, and he had drug and alcohol addiction. He's in psychiatric care now, 23 years. So lest I become complacent, I have Michael to keep me on track with my recovery. Both my sister, then my youngest sister, who's just a star. She's the star. She's 18 years sober in AA. And that has been a precious gift to our family. Also, both my parents got sober. And that also was a great gift. However, I've made a little list here about the gifts, because there's so many. There's about, I've eight written down here. And starting off with a relationship with a God of my understanding. I did grow up with a faith. My mother had great faith. But like others have shared here, it's like it was outside of me. Now with the 12 steps, it's in here. It's in my heart. I can feel it. because of what has happened to me in the program. It's like I put down roots and I've got this lovely image in my head of this beautiful tree, and I have put down roots that my higher power is just, it is when I wake up in the morning to let go and let go, that at step 3 and step 11 for me, I make a decision to turn my will over, and then I sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact, and that's how I start my day every day. Every day, what a blessing! So before I put my feet to the ground, that is where, as soon as my eyes open, that's where I connect, and I know that sets me up for the day. However, 2 years into my recovery was the year my brother was assaulted. It was the year my father nearly died. I'd got promotion and work again. Of course, I was providing, I worked in the health service. I'm a health professional. I'd taken on another role. I was doing voluntary work. I decided to go to Lourdes in France as a nurse to help out with the diocese. So like when you say it out loud, it was a crazy, crazy year. And I was 2 years in recovery. I had spent my first year or two crying out all the grief of growing up with two parents and alcoholic, learning a lot, listening, learning about how I was impacted by growing up, which was quite, there was two sides of it. My survival mechanisms were great and served me well. And it's like there's two sides to all of this. And it, you know, I there was positives in it. But on that journey back, something happened to me, and it was physical. It was emotional, and it was spiritual. I don't talk about it a lot to a lot of people, but it's been a significant part of my healing, because how I describe it is it was like 37, 38, 39 years of abject terror was released from me. I could feel it physically. I could feel it physically. And after that, I had to take off work for a couple of months. Like, it wasn't like a quick fix, you know. I remained very unwell. But that's the best thing ever happened to me. My husband called it a nervous breakdown. And that's probably what it was, you know. And out of that, I reduced my hours. I stopped doing my voluntary work. I stepped away from the work I was doing that I knew I wasn't fit to do, because I needed to build up my own resilience. So what that took me then to a wonderful sponsor, getting more engaged with the steps and really trying to apply it in my life. So as part of that, keeping that step 3 and step 11 close to my heart all the time, from that experience, it's never left me. I can't put into words how that transformed my life, because I was I know AAs talk about their program's life-saving. Well, I think mine's life-saving from what happened to me in at that time. That was a major shift. That was one of my spiritual awakenings. There's been plenty. And part of that was, you know, finding my voice, you know, courage. I was able to sit down with both my parents. Now, they were in recovery by this stage, and tell them what happened to me as a child, and how I felt and how damaged I was. Because I remember my mummy saying to me once, "Marie, will you go and talk to the psychiatrist about Michael? Because he's asked to speak to a member of the family who is well." And I had the sad job of saying to my mummy, "Mummy, I'm not well. I go to the 12-step program. I go to Al-Anon. I have been deeply, deeply affected. I've had to do a lot of work on myself. I'm a work in progress. I still am today. But yes, I will go and speak to the psychiatrist." And I did do that. And I talked to my mummy and daddy about, while I was talking to them, I could hardly speak. I was crying that much. They thought someone had died. But really, it was part of my healing. I needed to get this out. Now, my mummy was furious. She was angry. She was just very angry at me. My daddy was great. He heard me loud and clear. He just said to me, "You're a wonderful daughter, the best daughter anybody could ever wish, and I love you deeply." And, you know, my daddy died of the brain disease of alcoholism. He stopped drinking, but the brain was damaged. And see the gifts. Him and I had some great talks. I went from choked with hatred, pure, unadulterated hatred to the purest love, and that's only a miracle. And the higher power was working in my daddy's life and my mummy's life. Our house, there was no more bullshit. It got real. It got full of truth. We didn't turn into the Waltons or anything. There were still problems, but I will be forever grateful in preparing for this, talking about the gifts and letting go and letting God. That's what's happened to me in my relationship with my parents. But the other huge, huge part of my recovery and being able to let go and let God is my marriage, my children, and my work life. My marriage, I'm so glad I married a man who couldn't be controlled, because I really could do a good job of controlling and fixing and caretaking. I made a career out of it, a very successful career. The 12-step program helped me to get the balance on that as well. So I became a better person as a healthcare professional as well. But my husband, my God, I really don't know how he put up with it. And to this day, it's still, you know, I'm a work in progress. But I dug down deep and learned, tried to learn how to communicate with him, how to be more open, how to be not as affected. And I really tortured the man. I was terrified he'd be an alcoholic. So all of that. And then the other people have talked about children. And I went to my first AA meeting and I listened to two men and a lady talk about their journey. And, you know, it was my first taste of humility, because I came down off my self-righteous bandbox. Because I thought, my God, I'm doing all those things to my children and I'm not drinking alcoholically, but I'm doing all that. So that was tough, that was hard, but I'm so grateful I got in through the doors of Al-Anon when I did. My daughter would talk about the days when mommy was a maniac, do you know, because I did, I behaved terribly, like I was very badly affected. But that's one of the gifts of Al-Anon and the letting go and let God, my marriage, my children, and my work life. It's also given me balance and flexibility. I was very black and white and jumping to the extremes, but the program has taught me I never progress beyond being human. And that's very freeing for me today, very freeing. And the other thing about Al-Anon is the we, do you know, that I'm no, you know, our spiritual discipline of this can't be done on your own. If you could read it in a book or do it in a course, I'd have done it. But I was damaged in relationship and I knew I needed to be repaired in relationship. So that's why I'm a very grateful member of this program. I had more difficulties when I came to the program that was hatred for my dad, but I got a lot of healing around that. And when he died, there was a lot of peace, because my husband would have said to me, Marie, you hate your dad so much, you need to do something about it. If he dies, you're going to be left terribly traumatized. But, you know, for today, when he was ill, I could go to my meetings. The difficulty was between the two of them, my mom and my dad, when my dad was ill. It was really difficult. I loved my mummy deeply, but I find it so difficult. You know, I had to say to her, mummy, he's not our husband. He's your husband and he's my father. Do you know, we were so enmeshed. It was very, very difficult with both of them, even in sobriety. Thank God there was no drinking. I really am so glad about that. However, as part of my journey, I was asked to speak at an adult child conference in Belfast here. And as part of that, again, I had to let go of same thing, ego, trying to do it perfectly and over sense of responsibility, all of that. And that then let God in and opened me up to another wonderful gift that Al-Anon gave me. And it just opened up my awareness and acknowledged, I was able to acknowledge the gifts I got from my parents. Because I'd spent years cleaning out the trauma, cleaning out the grief, cleaning out all the awful stuff. So at this point, when I talk about balance and flexibility, the tears streamed down my face when I read the reading in Let Go and Let God. that guided me to look at what gifts my parents had passed on, their talents, not just their burdens. And, you know, from my mummy, I got great honesty, a certain gentleness, maybe a naivety, but this great care of other people. She had this marvelous love and care for other people. So had my dad. So had my daddy. I learned to separate out the disease from the people. What a gift. What a blessing. What a gift. And with my dad, I got, you know, I got his intelligence. He also was a writer for a local paper. And I love writing, and I write some poetry as well. So, you know, I got that from my dad, which is great. So it was great to be a speaker at an adult child convention. And that's the gift I got. You know, you always get, you get more than you give. You know, it's in giving we receive. Us Al-Anons know that. You know, you have to give it away to keep it, as well as pass it on, you know. So there was lots of good times. My father, after all the violence and horror of growing up, in his humility, and he really worked the program the best he could. My sister used to keep him going and saying, you can't get rigorous honesty. You know, she thought he could have done a bit more than he did. But for me, I was happy with what he did, you know, and that was good. Another time I had to let go and let God was with my mummy when she phoned me one night screaming down the phone about my brother was drinking and causing terrible problems in the house, and she was screeching like a banshee, screaming her head off, and I could feel my heart starting to palpate. I could feel my whole body starting to feel the trauma and all the stuff coming back. But I just took a breath, took a pause, and just said, Mummy, don't speak to me like that. And I'll call you another time when you're calm. And you know, that doesn't sound like a lot, but it took tremendous courage to sit and talk to my parents like this. And out of that came wonderful healing, wonderful conversations with them. And I mean, and another, I made amends to my parents. I apologized to them for my self-righteousness, for cutting them out of my lives and thinking I was better than them. You know, at a certain point in my recovery, I was brought to that awareness and was able to do that. So that was another gift. So the other thing that let go and let God works for me is letting go of expectations as premeditated resentments. I'm really, really good at that. I think it taps into my controlling element, you know. And I have to say, I've got a lot better at that, you know, not wanting them to change and love me the way I think they should love me so that I feel better. My higher powers guided me back to go on my knees and find that love inside myself. You know, it is an inside job. I've had to learn that. It's not outside. It's not in people, places, and things. It's much closer than that. And only the spiritual awakening and the God of my understanding could have brought that to my attention. So the courage to find my voice, I mean, that is, that, because there is like a sensitivity and a vulnerability in me. It's just a part of how I am. And it's part of maybe the job I do. But that is something that I accept today. I accept that it's quite fragile part of me. And I accept that today. And in this pandemic, in this coronavirus, I've been greatly challenged, lost two close friends. And there was an experience a week ago that I'll share that I really had to let go and let God. And I'm in the program a long time, but it's one day at a time and it's a work in progress. I have the humility for that today, to remain teachable, remain open to learn, treat others as I'd like to be treated is how I like to live. However, I've been challenged in this sort of lockdown and my husband and I being stuck together more than both of us would really want. And, you know, he pointed out to me a week ago that I was treating him in a similar way to how I'd grown up. Well, I have to tell you, I was annihilated. I felt crippled again. And do you know that those old messages, you should know better, shoulds, musts, had, oughts, you know, you're around long enough, you've got a great higher power. Where's all that? Where's all that gone? But do you know what I did? I went to my Zoom meeting. I talked. I cried it out. I let that unconditional love of members of my home group touch my heart. And I could feel just that little movement of let go, let God, forgive yourself. Here's the opportunity in this annihilation to heal another little bit of that stuff you're carrying, and let God guide you to make an amends to your husband. When I saw the pain on his face, that's when I felt, I just felt annihilated. But I left my meeting. Yep.
Hi, Marie. 5 minutes, okay?
Right, okay. Thanks, Louisa.
Flies, doesn't it?
It does now. So, well, that's a recent one, a recent experience of let go and let God. But for me, do you know the power of choice? I just love that power of choice. The freedom of that from the great Viktor Frankl, who's the Austrian psychiatrist who survived Auschwitz. He said the last of the human freedoms is choice in any and every circumstance. Isn't that wonderful? That fills me full of love, full of hope, and full of courage. I just love that man's search for meaning. So faith replaces fear for me. And in preparation for this, doing some of our readings, you know, it's a spiritual skill to be cultivated. And I now have a box full of life experience to draw from when I forget again, like I did last week, and like that situation happens, you know. So today I know my struggle with feeling faith is not an indication I don't possess it. It's a natural part of the process. Faith exists whether I can feel it or not. And I just love that, you know, that was another little piece for me. So I didn't think I could talk for 30 minutes, but look at, there you go now. I have managed it. In closing, I would like to just, the two big things for me is what I love about this program. It's not a religion, it's a spiritual program. It's for people of all faiths and none. Our books are full of the wisdom of the Talmud, of the Muslim books, the Sufis. Like, where would you get it? Really and truly, where would you get it? As I would talk to my Al-Anon friends, I've done many, many things, but all roads lead back here. And the Serenity Prayer is the other thing, you know, that this common humanity and staying connected, treating others as I want to be treated, helping me let go of my outworn, painful thinking patterns. And let go comes before let God for a reason. You know, there's two parts to that. And the Serenity Prayer does it for me. I just think it incorporates our whole program. And in reading our books, this is what I came across that really sits in my heart. The Serenity Prayer helps me to believe that serenity, courage, and wisdom are attainable. It strengthens my belief in the God of my understanding and gives me hope for a brighter future. So I just love that Serenity Prayer. It incorporates everything. And talking about my three adult children, and I have three angels who are my grandchildren, and there's been a lot of love mentioned here, and I can feel it. You can feel it in the rooms of Al-Anon. It's in the air, I think. Higher power, love is in the air. And I got this. I haven't seen my two children. They're in England, in Manchester and London, since Christmas. And that's been a really hard part of this for me. And I just want to finish reading this little card my daughter sent. She too is a health professional working on the front line, and thank God she's safe and well. But she sent me this card last week, and I just thought, beam me up, God, I've done it. My kids have had safety, security, and love that I didn't have. And this is what she wrote: to Mommy, you're my best friend and the most inspirational person that I know. You make me feel loved and have made me into the person I am today. I love you so much. This is a surreal Mother's Day. This is a late Mother's Day card, but know that we will all be together soon. And I've had similar from our two sons as well. So what a gift, what a blessing. Thank God for Al-Anon and all you lovely people. And thanks for listening.
Thank you, Mary from Ireland. Loved it. Loved listening to you.
Marie, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Marie. And the chat is open and we'd love to hear from members on the topic of let go and let God. And just before I hand it over to Yvonne, we'd like to thank you and Al-Anon Without Borders and the committee.